Heard about Anchor? It is the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. There are creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your own phone or computer. Anchor will also distribute your podcast so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more podcast platforms. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So download the Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started today.
Welcome everybody, to episode 42 of YWC Football Talk. And today I have one of the biggest guests I've ever had on here. He has over 50,000 followers on Twitter. He's an NFL writer for Fansided, NFL Spin Zone, full press coverage, Jets X Factor, supporter to Our Turf Football, and ex-nerd bowler on Good Morning Football. He spent 22 years at ESPN and a former writer for CBS Thursday Night Football. He's on lots of radio, plenty of television, and always lots doing and loves every single minute of it. Russell S. Baxter. Russell, welcome to YWC Football Talk, my friend.
Well, thank you for having me on. Thanksgiving week, we got three games on Thursday for the first time in a while. Everybody's this week, Rip.
Are you still there?
Yes.
Okay, sorry, you just kind of cut out there, that's all. But you were talking about
Thanksgiving. Oh, no, everybody's playing this week. That's what I was saying. Nobody's off this week.
No, that's right, because I believe Carolina and Tampa, their byes are week 13, not week 12.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, we haven't seen this far. We had some cancellations and rescheduling and so on, but for the most part, I think the NFL has handled COVID the best they can, and it's been a little crazy football season. When is it not? A lot of wild games, a lot of scoring, although scoring for the most part this past week was a little down. You know, we finally saw Raiders, Chiefs, and Colts, Packers, you know, both teams scoring 30 points, and the Chargers scored 34. And in the early games, it took overtime for Tennessee to get the 30. But that's to be expected. It's time for the defenses and the running games to take over down the stretch here.
Yeah, exactly. And the one game I want to talk about just off the hop was Green Bay, Indianapolis, because that game was basically, you know, when you go into a game thinking this game's going to be great, it's going to be awesome, like, it's what it built up to be. But when it was 28-14 at half, I'm like, okay, what's going on? I think I can see an Aaron Rodgers victory here. But then they took their foot off the gas pedal. And I saw you someone posted a tweet saying with Green Bay, what went wrong here? And you said, can we have an all of the above option? Because when you go three and out to open the half, and they gave Indy the room to work with to come back and win that game and getting outscored 20-3 in the second half, it set up for quite the dramatic game.
Yeah, the Packers had four turnovers in the game. They only had five all season coming in, and plenty of blame to go around. Aaron Rodgers had a lost fumble and an interception. The key turnover in overtime, the special teams turnover, which was a big momentum swing. Green Bay wound up giving up 140 yards rushing. That's been kind of their Achilles heel for a number of years. And only scored a field goal the whole second half and overtime. So, you know, the Colts came in with the number one defense in the league. They didn't look the part early on. They certainly did in the second half. A lot of adjustments that were made. And sometimes you just see that. And, it's a huge win for the Colts. And it's really been a good stretch for the Colts. They kind of got humbled by the Ravens at home, and they now rebounded with wins over Tennessee and Green Bay.
Yeah, exactly. And one key factor as well is the defense, and then even the special teams too in that Tennessee game. But the emergence of rookie wide receiver Michael Pittman Jr. I think has really helped the Indianapolis Colts as well, because he's been kind of quiet. And against Tennessee, he blossomed and had over 100 yards. And then yesterday, he had his first career touchdown. So I think just the fact that they've been spreading the ball out so well, and also too, Jonathan Taylor finally got going yesterday when Frank Wright realized, hey, Green Bay's run defense isn't the best in the league, so they just let Taylor have the ball and just go wild.
Yeah, I mean, I'm one of those people that believes in many ways carries are as important or more important than yards. And being persistent with the running game keeps your defense off the field, sets up your play action, enables you to control the tempo of the game. That's we have seen in the past teams get behind 10 points, 14 points, 21 points, and abandon the run. The smarter teams do not. I always go back. A prime example of that was the Super Bowl, Atlanta and New England. Okay. Obviously, everybody knows 28-3. What people don't realize, or some people don't realize, is by the end of that game, New England and Atlanta had the same amount of rushing yards, but New England had more running plays. And who would have thought that down 25 points? So you don't abandon the run. Mike Martz, who was the Rams head coach for, many years, he took him to the Super Bowl in 2001. He was one of those guys who was very quick to abandon the run. It was almost like he welcomed it. The smarter coaches do not abandon the run when they get behind. And watching, we see comebacks over the last 5 or 6 years. Coming back in the NFL has been easier than it ever has. If you're down 10, 15, 17, let's not even talk about the Chargers. If you're down 17 to the Chargers, you almost welcome it.
I know. I just love the comparison with the Chargers. And also, too, I don't know if I ever told you this before, but I'm actually a New England fan. So I can talk 28-3 all day long until I go blue in the face. But you're right, though, where you've seen so many comebacks this year, too. Like we said, where the Chargers had a lot. Other ones I can think of, too. Yesterday, for example, with Indianapolis. The other ones, too, were Atlanta this year with Chicago and Dallas. And even, too, week one, Detroit, I believe, was up 23-6 on the Bears, and the Bears had this miraculous comeback week one. So you're right. The comeback, it's not so much that it's rare, but it's just always expect the unexpected. That's why I love the saying, any given Sunday, when it comes to the NFL.
There was a year, and I started tracking this. I kind of lost track of it. But go back to the year 2014, okay? There's 17 weeks in the regular season, obviously, and there's 4 weeks in the postseason. Okay, so that's 21 weeks of meaningful football. In every one of those 21 weeks, there was at least one comeback of 10 or more points for a team to win. Okay? Now think about how odd that is. Because as you get to the postseason, that meant there was one out of four in the wild card round. That meant there was at least one out of four in the divisional round. That means there was at least one out of two in the NFC championship round. And obviously, there was a 10-point comeback in Super Bowl when New England came back to beat Seattle. So the entire year, and that streak actually stretched into 2015. So it's not as rare to see these comebacks. Baltimore had Pittsburgh down by double digits and lost at home. They had Tennessee down by double digits and lost at home. So I kidded for a couple of years here. If Roger Goodell ever steps down in NFL as NFL commissioner, maybe the league can hire Mariano Rivera so that he can teach teams how to close.
I love that comparison with Mariano Rivera, but you literally nailed it, because when you said the 2014 season in the playoffs, I'm like, you're right, because the divisional round, there was that infamous Patriot-Raven game where the Ravens were up 14-0, and then New England tied it, and then it was 28-14, and then 28-28. NFC Championship game, I think... Green Bay was up, 14-0 or something like
16,
that.
16, I think they were up 16.
16-0, and then I remember there was, and then they had the big comeback in overtime and everything like that. So, and then even to, like you said, I remember Seattle was up 24-14 in the Super Bowl, and then we all know New England came back with, I think they got their final touchdown about 2 minutes, just over 2 minutes to go, and then obviously we know what happened at the end there with Malcolm Butler, but the more I think about it, you honestly opening my eyes to more football knowledge that I didn't realize about, because the only other, and even two other games, I don't know if it's the same season, but the Colts had that crazy comeback in the wild card round, I think 2014 against the Kansas City Chiefs. The Titans in 2017 in the wild card round also against the Chiefs. So I always do this bad habit of my team I'm watching is down. It's like you always want to give up, but then you're opening my eyes to not give up. And I thank you for that, sir.
No, listen, I spent a lot of time watching football when I was watching. My days at ESPN, and we'd all, we'd be in a big room with a bunch of TVs and so on. And I was astounded sometimes by certain people in the room when the game was 7-0. They were just like, gotcha. I'm like, seriously? I mean, I was in that room with a couple other people when the Bills made their epic comeback against the Oilers. You see a lot of wild stuff over the years, and you just learn that it's never over till it's over. I know that's, Yogi Berra and et cetera, et cetera. I can remember being, in the days where you didn't have a remote and we had a black and white TV in my house in 1978. and I was getting ready to switch over CBS. CBS had the NFC, and then you would switch over to NBC, which had the AFC. And the Giants were playing the Eagles and getting ready to kill the clock. And I think you know what's happening next. But I turned the channel to go to a different game and then found out later about the miracle of the Meadowlands. So, you know, it is never over and over. And irony of ironies, years later, many years later, I wound up working with him, Herm Edwards, at ESPN.
You honestly, the one thing I'll say about reminding me about that, I know about the miracle, the first miracle at the Meadowlands, not the DeSean Jackson one from about 10 years ago. But the first one, though, I think I first heard about it on the NFL, the fantastic NFL 100 series that the NFL Network did last year, where it was like 100 games, like game changers, players, moments, just all this. Like, I can't remember everything on top of my head, but they did that. And then also, do I listen? Well, one way I get through my day at work is listening to Pro Football Talk and Mike Florio famously saying that Herm Edwards, I think, had some choice words that you can't exactly say on television. So those are just certain memory sparks that came to mind. And also, too, I believe the Oilers-Bills game you're talking about is the one where Frank Wright actually was the quarterback for the Buffalo Bills back in the
90s. Yes, he was.
Yes.
Yes, he was. And no Jim Kelly, and Thurmus Thomas was banged up for that game. It was a lot of Andre Reed and Steve Tasker and Kenneth Davis. And, you know, it was pretty wild. To watch that. And you were mentioning the Colts-Chiefs game from a couple of years ago when I want to say Andy Reid was – Andy Reid's had a couple of big-time flops in the playoffs. He was beating the Titans at home back in 2017, let that game get away. So, which was so ironic because last year in the playoffs, all the Chiefs did was come back from 10-point deficits every one in their playoff games.
With, like, because, yeah, like, you're right, because even last year where the wild card, the divisional round, they had a bye, there was a 24-0, and then Houston had that weird fake punt, and then everything was downhill from there where they got outscored, like, 51 to, like, 7. The AFC Championship game was the significant Patrick Mahomes run right before half, and then there's that famous meme of the Niners celebrating with, I think, like, 10 minutes to go, and then, like, literally, even the... they were on the other side, too. Where they, I know they lost in 2018, but they were down, I believe, 14-0 at half against the Patriots, and then they took New England overtime, and then obviously there was some... That's where the overtime rules started coming into play, if the NFL should change them. And also with that game, that was the game where I remember in overtime, Brady converted three times on third down in overtime to get them downfield, and then there was the pick that was offside, and then there was the D-Ford offside where Sorensen picked him off.
Yeah, I mean, it just shows you with the way the game is played right now, with the emphasis on passing, with the emphasis on spreading the field, you know, you really have a lot of time left to do what you have to do. And that's when you see even a mismatched game, all it takes is a couple of plays to swing the momentum and so on. And, you know, there's a lot to be said for these comeback wins because I think they rejuvenate a team, because it's hard to play a perfect game for 60 minutes. Every team makes mistakes. Every team in this league is flawed, okay? As good as Kansas City looks, you know, I've given up 31 points the last 2 weeks. As long as good as Pittsburgh is undefeated, their run defense is a little suspect. And, you know, every once in a while they get a little sloppy with the football and so on. So there is no perfect team. There's no great team in this league right now, unless one of these teams goes on an epic run this, you know, down the stretch here and in the playoffs. And maybe that's what it's going to take to win a championship. You know, if you don't think any team is capable of beating another team, and I know we have an 0-10 team and I know we have a 1-9 team, but I saw Jacksonville go into Green Bay last week and give them fits. So, you know, I know it's cliche to say this, they're all professionals and so on, but you know, I've worked with enough former football players to tell you that it's not cliche.
No, you're 100% right. Where, like, and even too, like, with the Jets, for example, where everyone's going, oh, are they trying to lose on purpose? Where, no team is trying to lose on purpose. Are there teams, obviously, that are better than others? Sure, but no team's going in every week saying, hey, guys, we're going to lose this week. No, it's every week the New York Jets and Adam Gase, and even too with Doug Marrone in Jacksonville, they're going in, they're saying, guys, we're setting up the best game plan that we think we can to win. Sometimes, you know what, it's just the unfortunate way of, they're, like I said, some teams are better than others, and also, too, the schedule is a big part of it. Like, I just want to reference another tweet I saw from yours that someone commented saying, oh, the Steelers have such an easy schedule, they're so overrated, and then you made the point of the schedule gets decided 8 months before the season starts, which is something I look at every year because I know, like, okay, so this, because of where they finished, they're going to play this team. So where the Steelers were second place last year and didn't have to play Kansas City, next year more than likely they're going to have to, so they're going to have a little bit more of a tougher schedule.
Yeah, well, it just depends. I mean, you know, it's a rotating system, although, to be honest with you, Griff, that kind of goes out the window next year because we're 17 games next year. So, you know, that formula is yet to be figured out, how they're going to – who is going to be the 17th game? Is it going to be a rematch, you know, according to slotting? Is it going to be an interconference game? I'm not sure. You know, they've had this formula that they have right now where every team in the same division plays 12 identical opponents, okay? That's just how it is. That's why when you see these schedule rankings at the beginning of the year, you know, maybe four of the top five teams are from the same division and four of the top five bottom five teams are from the same division because they're all playing the same teams. So this year, the AFC North drew the AFC South as far as a division, and they drew the NFC East. Now, who knew the NFC East was going to be as bad as it was going to be? So there's other years where the NFC East is pretty formidable. So there's a lot of luck involved in it and so on. And again, if you're a first-place team, you know, just depending on, you know, how the cards fall and so on, what the other first-place teams, you know, we had last year, remember, in 2018, in 2019, the same four teams that won the division in the AFC did it back-to-back years. So, there was, you know, they were all first-place teams 2 years in a row. So you just never know. And, again, depending on who wins what division and so on, there's an element of luck to it. But as far as, you know, easy this and easy that and so on, there's no way to really change that, you know. And, you know, I often hear people talk about, well, a last-place schedule. Well, a last-place schedule is not what it used to be. When the league went to 16 games in 1978, there were divisions that had four teams, but most of the divisions, and there were only six divisions back then, had five teams, okay? So say you were the NFC East and you were the NFC Central, okay, as it was called. And the St. Louis Cardinals and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers both finished in fifth place, Griff. They would play a home and home, even though they weren't in the same division. That's how you came up with the fifth place schedule, okay?
Okay.
So, and then they would play other last place teams and, you know, interconference games, et cetera, et cetera. It would, their schedule was like a little different. So that's not the case anymore with eight divisions and four divisions in each team. So depending on who you play, and listen, who knows? Who knows how good a team is going to be from year to year? You know, going into this season, there's only four teams in the league going into this season that have been to the playoffs at least three consecutive years. That's the Patriots with 11, the Chiefs with 5, and the Saints and the Eagles 3 years in a row. Now, New England and Philadelphia have got their work cut out for them. I know Philly's technically in first place, but everybody in that division has three wins right now. So, and Philly lost to the Redskins, and Philly lost to the Giants on the road. So, listen, I mean, they've got some work to do fending off those other teams. And, you know, right now, you make a case in that division, the New York Giants are playing as good a football as any team.
To be honest, if I had the pick right now, I trust the New York Giants the most. That you're playing really good defense. I just think they're going to go as far as Daniel Jones will let them, if that makes any sense. Like, if he can just avoid turnovers and fumbles, I think that's the team that's got the best shot to win. At the beginning,
well, they have not turned over the ball their last two games.
No, they have not, and they looked really good against
which
the...
Which is a big plus, and they've got a defense, and I'll throw out two guys who have had big years. One of them's a former first-round draft choice who they got for the Browns in the trade, and that's Jabril Peppers, who has really come on as a safety. And Lakin Tomlinson, I don't think it's any secret, he's one of the better defensive tackles on the league.
Yeah, no, and also, too, the other guy I'd love to say, one of the free agent steals, if you will, would be James Bradbury, playing really good for corner with them.
And Logan Ryan, getting Logan Ryan, who was a late signing. he's made an immediate contribution to that team as well. I'll never understand why Tennessee didn't re-up him, regardless of the price. I know they had contracts with Tannehill and Henry, but Logan Ryan led that team in tackles. He was a sack artist. He forced fumbles. I think in the three playoff games last year combined, he had 25 tackles. He was all over for the field for him, for them. And I was just surprised. You know, they brought in a couple pass rushers, Vic Beasley, who didn't
pan out.
And, Jadeveon Clowney, who's been hurt and inconsistent. And listen, I know Tennessee 7-3, but boy, they like to give up a lot of points.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I think this Sunday's game for them is a must win. Like, if they do not win that game this coming Sunday against the Colts, I think it's the Colts' division to lose at that point. But even to Logan Ryan had the last ever throw Tom Brady had in a New England Patriots uniform. Just a little fact I like to remember. But no, you're right. And even in the sense, too, like where you said, Jabril Peppers really, he was great at Michigan, kind of struggled in Cleveland, but he's come to New York, found his own. A lot of work, too, and that has to go out to Patrick Graham, who's been a great defensive coordinator for the Giants.
Well, listen, Joe Judge has brought in a culture change, just like Brian Flores did in Miami. You know, and I know former New England assistants get a lot of flack for not being necessarily successful. And Matt Patricia has certainly not been successful. But Mike Grable has. And certainly Brian Flores has turned that team around, and Joe Judge is turning that team around. Smart, fundamental football, avoid mistakes, you know, don't beat yourself, do your job. You know, all those cliches that you seem to draw a giggle on by some people, you know, they hold up. And, you know, when you have a culture that's been successful for 20 years, why not copy it?
Exactly, because that's the one thing I always kind of pointed out, like the difference between, like, Joe Judge, Brian Flores, and then Matt Patricia. I feel like Judge and Flores were themselves, but they brought Belichick lessons and, like, mannerisms to their respective teams. Meanwhile, I feel like Patricia's just trying to duplicate what Belichick did, being a hard-ass, being that, like, no-nonsense coach. Meanwhile, Flores and Judge have their locker rooms. Like, they know, like, hey, guys, I'm going to be me. I'm going to be, like, the lovable coach. But when it's time to get down to business, it's time to get down to business.
And Rabel comes from a totally different perspective because he was a player under Belichick and then moved on to the coaching ranks. He was, the Texans defensive coordinator for like 1 year.
And the linebackers coach for the Texans.
Up here. And as we saw in the playoff win last year at New England, he out Belichick with some of those little tweaks of the rules and so on. Knowing the rule book.
That's one thing that was very smart too, because like that literally, I just remembered that the two punts where he just purposely bled the clock and took timeouts, and then because I remember it happened last year, too, where Belichick and the Patriots were up, like, I think 30-0 or 33-0 on the New York Jets on Monday Night Football. And Belichick was just doing the same thing to Adam Gase. And that's when there was that thing of Belichick just smirking on the sideline. Meanwhile, Vrabel basically gave him a bit of his own medicine in that wild card round. But also, too, when you said the flack with Patricia, I literally was thinking about just the flack that he takes. I was literally thinking that same word as you said it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's Bob Quinn, who also worked in New England, you know, brought in Matt Patricia. It's just not has not worked out there whatsoever. I was talking to someone earlier today. I never understood why they parted ways with Jim Caldwell. He had three winning seasons there. He took him to two playoff appearances. I know he didn't win those playoff games, but the Lions haven't won a playoff game since 1991. That's not on Jim Caldwell. They haven't won a division title since 1993. That's not on Jim Caldwell. They haven't won an NFL title since 1957. That's not on Jim Caldwell. The only team in the NFC not to beat to the Super Bowl. Who do you want to blame for that?
I honestly don't know, because like when you're saying all the facts, like for one, they haven't won a playoff game since well before I was born, and then the last time they won a division was the year I was born, 1993. So just to put it into perspective, I'm almost 27. It's been 27 years since the Lions, but you're right. Like, oh, Jim Caldwell, like, literally, we knew the hiring was Bob Quinn just wanted to get in there and hire his guy. It's as simple as that.
Well, yeah, and that's not unusual. I mean, and you look at John Robinson down in Tennessee. He's another New England disciple, and he brought in Rabel. So, I mean, that's really the business and so on. You know, you bring in the people that you're familiar with and so on, and, you know, you build your system.
You see it all over the place. It's the same way you build a team with free agency. You get guys who are familiar with your work. I mean, you can, I always call free agency the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, because you can just trace, really trace, oh, this connection, that connection. And it doesn't hold up all the time. Sometimes it's a monetary deal and the guy goes someplace where he can make a good living because he didn't necessarily get a big contract. He wasn't a first-round draft choice and so on. But you see people bring in people that they're familiar with. It's like anything else. If you were, you know, say you were taking your radio show and had done this for a long time and worked with certain producers and certain technical people, if you were moving on somewhere else, Griff, you would probably do the same thing. You bring in the same producers and you bring in the same technical people.
No, you're right. Like, it's like the same thing too with the like when you say that, because I know every NFL game they always shout out just quickly the producer, the director. Because actually, I do have a background. That's my background besides doing this podcast is broadcast television. So I know a bit of the insides on that. But you're right though in the sense where, like, what I was going back to, like, I know every time I hear a Nats and Romo game, Nats will always say the same director. I believe it's Mike Arnold, Tom Wolfe, those guys like that. So you're right. Where you know what you're going to go with what you like. Same thing too. Like even with the TV stuff. You want to go with the same camera crew that you want. You're going to go with the same just everything. Because, like, look, if it works, it works, and that's what you know. You don't want to – even though sometimes it's good to try something new, you got to stick with what you know.
Well, I worked – when I was at ESPN, I was primary studio. You know, I spent a lot of time doing NFL primetime with Chris Berman and Tom Jackson for a long time. But when we did the NFL draft, that was the remote aspect of ESPN, and the first producer I worked with on the NFL draft was Fred Caudelli. Now, I know you know that name because he's a producer of Sunday Night Football for NBC. And then eventually I worked with Jay Roth, Monday Night Football for ESPN, for a long time. And you hear that they're also referenced on the air by, you know, Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth, or, you know, whoever's doing Monday Night Football at the time. Over the years, Jay's not doing the show. So, yeah, you're working with people who are familiar with, and they're familiar with you, and they know what your strengths are, and you know what their strengths are, and you craft it. Because when you're in that truck, when you're doing a live show, you have no control about what's going to happen. You just have to be as prepared as possible, because anything can ever happen. I remember being doing, you know, you mentioned Thursday Night Football. We were in Detroit 5 years ago when Aaron Rodgers threw the Hail Mary to Richard Rodgers. So, you know, who saw that coming at the end of the game? As it turned out, Aaron Rodgers had quite the year that year with Hail Marys in a couple in Arizona in the playoff game as well. So, you know, you just want to be as prepared as possible, but working with people who know you and vice versa and so on makes it a lot easier.
You literally nailed it on the head. Like, it's like expect the unexpected. Like, even two, one play I can think of is the Minneapolis Miracle or the Miracle of Miami, where those were just plays where you don't know what to expect. But even, like, just with the Minneapolis Miracle, I have to say where Buck, I've heard interviews with Joe Buck where he said, like, he was on his last just words, just, like, in the sense of, like, just losing his voice. Because you could tell as he's shouting, like, Diggs, sideline, touchdown. And, like, you just see all the craziness and pandemonium that comes from that. But then these experienced crews know exactly what to do in those moments. Like, I feel like they always have, like, that back pocket plan of, hey, if this happens, just be ready to go.
Oh, no question about it. And I used to always, you know, kid around with the fact that, you know, back in 1999, the Music City Miracle, you know, was it, you remember ESPN had that game, and the ABC crew had the Detroit Reds Washington game in the wild card round. And that was Al Michaels doing the Detroit Washington game. Could you imagine if he had actually done the Music City Miracle game and he got to utter the phrase, do you believe in miracles again?
I did not think put two and two together, because I think that's one thing not a lot of people know about him is that Al Michaels was the voice for men's hockey at the 1980 Olympics. Like, I only knew about that because, like, as I do more research and stuff like that, you start to discover that thing, because besides football, that's my other favorite sport is hockey. So yeah, it's just things like that. Like, we're literally, and it would literally be like 20 years apart too from when the Miracle in Lake Placid happened with the United States men's hockey team, and then 20 years later with the Music City Miracle. Obviously, two are on very different levels with the Olympics and the NFL, because the Olympics obviously is the greatest sporting event in the world. But Man, you've opened my eyes up to so much tonight. I can't thank you enough for that.
Well, it's fun. It's football. I mean, if I wanted to work for a living, I wouldn't be doing this. This is not work. Okay, instead of watching around and watch games and write about it. So I used to say all the time, you know, when I would hear, you know, certain people in our medium group complaining about their jobs and so on. And I remember saying to somebody one day, I said, so let me get this straight. You go to the game for free. You sit behind glass in the press box. You get fed for free. You're writing. They're getting dirty. And they're the ones getting hurt. And you're complaining? Can you please explain that?
If they want to complain about that, I'm here to take that job over. I will gladly... Like, that's the other thing, too. And even, say, for example, playoff football, where the weather can be suspect. Like, I look outside my window right now, and it snowed where I'm at last night, and it's still on the ground. There's those playoff games where it's frigid temperatures, where the fans are outside freezing, and then the press box. It's like, you're right. You're behind glass. You're protected from the elements, so it's like, what really are you complaining about? Like, you're living the dream that millions aspire and want to do, and would be, frankly, there's a lot of football fans who are on their couches every Sunday who would love to do that.
Listen, we all know people in the world, in our lives, and so on, you know, sad as it can be sometimes, if they ever won Powerball, they'd complain about the taxes.
Exactly, and unless if you're fortunate enough to live in a state where, well, actually, never mind, I was going to say income tax is still a thing, but they'll still find a way to take it from you. It's like, oh, hey, no, you didn't win this amount, but you still have this. It's like, oh, come on, what about that? It's like, hey, you still won, like, millions of dollars. I would just be like, I'm like the opposite. It's like, okay, cool, I'll take my money and go.
Yeah. Let me have your problem. Let me take this off your hands and, you know, alleviate you of this stress and so on. I'll see, like, what I could do with this money for you, so...
Exactly. But one other game I just wanted to talk to you about yesterday was the Chiefs and the Raiders, just because, like, how you're saying how both teams let up 30, 34 to 31. This game was literally what I thought. You know, I said before with Colts, Packers, it was what I thought it was going to be. There's the same thing with this game where I thought it was just going to be like a heavyweight fight where Kansas City just had enough to get, like, you know, in those Rocky movies where Rocky just gets, like, that one last punch in and just knocks the guy out. That's what I thought was going to happen last night with the Chiefs and the Raiders. And lo and behold, the Raiders decided to rush four guys on Patrick Mahomes. Travis Kelce wide open in the end zone. Game over.
Well, you know, these teams, what, 35-31?
Yes.
I believe. So 66 points, which was actually 6 points less than the first time they played this year when it was 40-32, 72 points. So you should have kind of got an idea what you were in for. The Chiefs going back now, since week 12 of last year, are 18-1 in their last 19 games, including the postseason. The only loss was to the Raiders at Arrowhead. Their defense, for the most part, has played exceptionally well. It's one of the reasons they were able to win the Super Bowl. But you saw what Derek Carr and company did yesterday. The Vegas offense put up 5 offensive touchdowns. At Arrowhead Stadium, that's the most the Chiefs have allowed over the stretch. So, be interesting if they square off for a third time this year.
I honestly don't think the Raiders are going to be scared going into Arrowhead, like you can tell a lot of teams are, because it's like, oh, it's the Chiefs. The Raiders are going to be like, it's a divisional opponent, like, meh, kind of shrug their shoulders and go. And the one thing I'll say about the Raiders' success, too, is I feel like John Gruden's finally stopped trying to make Derek Carr the quarterback he wants him to be. Rather than that, he's working to Derek Carr's strengths and letting Derek Carr be Derek Carr.
I think he's surrounded him with better people. He's surrounded him with a workhorse running back in Josh Jacobs. Darren Waller's turned out to be a real pleasant surprise. He's got more talent at the wide receiver position. Nelson Aguilar, who had a lot of drops early in his career, he seemed to rectify that with the Eagles, and then he couldn't stay healthy. He's come home and been big time for them. Henry Ruggs has helped them out as well. They have a lot of weapons. The Raiders' biggest problem is the defense, and they can't seem to get that figured out. And it's been for even when they made the playoffs in 2016, when Derek Carr had a year where, you know, until he broke his leg, he was right in the MVP discussion. But their defense, I mean, they had the defensive player of the year that year in Khalil Mack, and they still couldn't stop anybody.
Exactly, but like, because even to your right, like Derek Carr had that amazing season, week 16 broke his leg, and then Connor Cook came in, and we kind of know what happened from there, and I don't even think Connor Cook's in the league anymore. The only other thing I was going to, like, what I meant by that, too, is just, like, with Derek Carr being Derek Carr, I feel like Gruden's, like, kind of stopped grooming him. But then also, too, Mike Mayock was a guy where, like John Lynch, when he made the transition from the booth over to player development, or general manager, excuse me, he knew what he was doing, too, because if you go back and look at all the drafts that the NFL Network does and all the combine stuff, who's smack dab in the middle of that scouting college talent but Mike Mayock? So, like, Mike Mayock's been a really good GM when I think a lot of people didn't know exactly how he was going to do. But the Raiders in that new dome, like, if they can improve their defense, they're slowly going to be a good team. And also, too, it doesn't hurt to have, like, Jason Witten there just to kind of, like, help Darren Waller along.
And also keep in mind, because I worked the draft with John Gruden at ESPN, you know, so listen, they were like kind of draft rivals. One guy's on the NFL Network, one guy's on ESPN. So, you know, I can tell you John Gruden did a lot of homework when it came to the NFL draft every year. And so you had two guys with a lot of experience in terms of knowing the college talent. Even though John was in the Monday Night Football booth, he did the NFL draft. And like I said, did a lot of homework. So I think that was a big advantage. So you get two people, you know, pretty adept at what's going on in college football. And I think they've done a pretty good job filling some holes.
They honestly have. Because, like, even too, I remember when you say John Gruden with the NFL draft, I remember this clip from 2011, right before the draft. He was doing just, like, locker room talk, chalk talk with Andrew Luck. And he kept saying, spider too wide banana. So every time I see John Gruden, I'm always reminded of that because he's basically in there and he'll give, like, he gave Andrew Luck kind of like, hey, here's the play, like, how exactly would you run it? So he gets a sense of, like, hey, here's what Andrew Luck can do well. Here's what Andrew Luck can recognize as he's calling a play and he's on the field.
That's just. Absolutely, yeah. You know, Coach Gruden, I didn't do Monday Night Football with him. I just did the draft because I was the studio guy. You know, he brings a lot of passion. I think he's come back here. And slowly but surely, they have built something. Now, I know last year at this time, they were 6-4 as well, and things kind of fell apart at the end of the year. And, you know, obviously they're hoping to avoid that this year. They look like a better football team, but the defense is concerning.
Yeah, that's the only thing really with me, in my opinion, with the Raiders is the defense. Because, like, I have a feeling they're going to be one of the wild card teams. It's just really the defense is like, you know, I said before, the Giants will go as far as Daniel Jones can take them. With the Raiders, I think it's the opposite, where they're going to go as far as their defense can take them.
Right. Well, you better play some defense in the playoffs or you're not going to go very far, whether people believe that or not, whether people believe it's an offensive league now and so on. Kansas City, you know, the year they scored all those points, they also gave up 421 points. Okay? Now, you can do the math. That's over 26 a game. That's why they couldn't get off the field in the AFC Championship game. You know how many points the Chiefs gave up last year? 308. That's a difference of 113 points. That's 7 points a game less. Okay? In fact, Kansas City last year gave up fewer points than San Francisco. And San Francisco was supposed to be the great defensive team. So Kansas City got started late with their feet defense after taking over, or after Steve Spagnuolo took over, and they got off to a shaky start the first 10 games. But that's why Kansas City's so dangerous. They're balanced. They can beat you at offense, defense, and special teams. A couple of years ago, they just had to outscore you.
Exactly, because I remember with Bob Sutton, when he was their defensive coordinator, just going back to the two games against the Patriots, I think one was like 40-37 or 43-40, and then the AFC Championship game was 36-31. Meanwhile, the two games since when they've played New England, it was 23-16 and 26-10. So you can definitely tell the change. Like, as soon as they got rid of Bob Sutton, because I knew that was nothing against him. Bob Sutton, like, been in the league a long time. Obviously, if when it comes to football knowledge, probably knows a lot more than I do. But with a guy like him, what was I going to say? But with a guy like Spags coming in, Spags, who's won a Super Bowl before as a defensive coordinator with the New York Giants, came into Kansas City. They added a couple pieces with, like, Tyrann Mathieu. And look where it led them. It led them to a Super Bowl. Russell, are you still there?
I'm still here.
Okay, just making sure. Just because after I said that thing, you kind of went quiet for a second. That's all.
Yeah, I said yes.
Okay. Sorry. I guess I didn't pick that up on you. But the one thing I was just wanted to add on to with a game like, not, I was going to say tonight's game, because that's actually starting right about now with the Raiders and the, the Rams and the Buccaneers. I don't know why I got the two teams confused. I think it's the same thing with the Tampa Bay Bucs, because obviously you have Tom Brady on the offensive side of the ball with all his weapons. But I was starting to think to myself with Tampa Bay, I know they have Brady, I know they have Gronk, Evans, Godwin, Leonard Fournette, Antonio Brown, but part of me still thinks that even though Tom's got the most playoff wins out of any quarterback, I still think that the defense is going to carry the team for as far as they can go. Because look, one game they can be stellar and like stop Green Bay and hold them to 10 points, but then the next game they let the Saints hang 38 on them. So that was just one quick thing I wanted to add.
Yeah, they've been inconsistent. You know, they've shown they can be very powerful, and they also shown they can be very, very ordinary. And even their defense at times has been burned by long plays. The Giants game, all they could handle. You know, Carolina moved the ball on them for a half, and then, you know, the turning point was the Ronald Jones 98-yard touchdown run and so on. So, you know, one week they're scoring 3 points, one week they're scoring 46 points. They got to develop some consistency, and their defense has to play. And not, they get the takeaways, but they give up a lot of long pass plays.
Exactly. And the one thing I was even going to say, too, with this coming Sunday, I think this Sunday, if they can beat Kansas City or even hang with Kansas City, then I'm going to put them in that stratosphere of, look, if they go to the Super Bowl, they have a legitimate shot to win, because more than likely it'll probably be Pittsburgh or Kansas City. That's going to be the AFC representative. But if they go out there against Kansas City and they get whooped like they did against New Orleans, who's really going to take them as a Super Bowl contender anymore?
No, I know. Like I said, they've been erratic, and it'll be interesting to see how they perform down the stretch. Remember, they own the second longest playoff drought in the league. Only the Cleveland Browns have been absent from the playoffs longer than the Buccaneers.
Which both streaks, for all we know, may come to an end at some point, actually in the next couple months. Because that's the one thing I hate about the NFL season, is that like you wait 7 months for it to come around. I'm going from when the Super Bowl ends, and then you have the combine, free agency, schedule comes out, draft, and then you have all like the stuff which we didn't get this year, like OTAs and rookie camp and mini camps and then training camp. But then before you know it, the season's here, and then all of a sudden it's, look, hey, we're already at Thanksgiving, and it's week 12. It's just like, oh, if I could wish for anything in the world, it'd be for the season to go by slower.
Absolutely. Yeah, but it doesn't. It just kind of flies by. We all get into our little routines, and off you go.
Exactly. And even to the other point I want to add on for this Thursday's games was, it's going to be interesting to see the slate of games, because I know the first two kind of aren't attractive, but I feel like it's, I used a metaphor of like, you got to get through like a dry or even maybe a burnt turkey to get to that dessert, because I feel like Thursday, Detroit-Houston, it is what it is. Same thing with Dallas-Washington, which could be very intriguing now considering, hey, both teams won yesterday, and that's pretty much could be a division eliminator game. And then we've got this just absolute, what everyone's expecting to be this absolute masterpiece at night with Baltimore and Pittsburgh.
Yeah, depending on what's going on with the Ravens, obviously they're having some COVID issues. If you're not up on the news and so on, especially with the running back position, you know, it's, you don't see Pittsburgh on Thanksgiving. In fact, I believe it's the first time the Steelers have ever hosted a Thanksgiving Day game. You know, some on Thanksgiving. Remember, they played at Baltimore. I would think it was 2013. That game's probably more known for a certain tripping incident by Mike Tomlin.
Oh, I remember that. Jacoby Jones was running the ball back, and then Mike Tomlin was, like, on the field, but then he did that little hop, and then basically Baltimore was so mad at him. But even, you're right, though, where, for those of you who don't know, Baltimore currently had that put Ingram and J.K. Dobbins on the COVID list, and also, I believe, added right before was Brendan Williams, their star defensive tackle. So, if that, part of me still thinks that game is going to get played Thursday night, just because the NFL is going to base, has this whole,
show's going to go on. Played. It just, you know, they might be a little shorthanded, but, you know, they did run for 265 yards against the Steelers a couple of weeks ago.
Exactly. So we'll see if Gus Edwards is up for the challenge. And also, too, this, I think, I want to say Pittsburgh's going to win, but it wouldn't shock me if Baltimore has, like, a get-right game. Like, you know what the Seattle Seahawks had last Thursday against the Cardinals, where they had the bad loss against Buffalo and L.A., and then they played Seattle, and the defense was clicking. Russell Wilson looked like Russell Wilson, and he didn't turn over the ball at all.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, the Baltimore needs to right the ship. They're sinking fast. 1-3 in their last four games after the 5-1 start.
Yeah, which isn't a good look, because even to like how you had the game where you, the Colts game with Pittsburgh, then you lost, and then even to, I know they beat the Colts, but it was a bit of a shaky game at first. It took them a while to get going, kind of like with Tampa Bay last week against Carolina, And then there was the game last Sunday night with New England where you could say weather was a factor. And then also, too, there was just certain things where New England's like this one step forward, two step back team this year. And then Tennessee, you have this great chance to play. But then, man, when you let up a big run like that to Derrick Henry, that is just deflating, in my opinion. The overtime walk-off touchdown run that he had.
Yep, the Titans went in there 2 years in a row and beat them once in the playoffs and obviously this Sunday.
And also, too, one thing I found out today is that Derrick Henry is one more walk-off touchdown away from tying the all-time record that is held by, I believe, LaDainian Tomlinson. So just a little fun football fact. Like, whenever I find facts like that, I just find it interesting, no matter where I hear them from, as I listen to many football podcasts, apart from this one that I host, usually about 2 to 3 times a week I upload, usually more than likely it's going to be 2.
Yeah, no, there's always, we used to call them tids. Little tids and tads and stuff, so.
No, exactly, but anyway, Russell, do you have anything else you want to add about yesterday or just the NFL in general?
No. Like I said, looking forward to a full slate, looking forward to see what happens down the stretch. You know, can Pittsburgh hold on, and not so much being undefeated, but can they be the number one seed? Because only one team gets to bye in each conference this year. It's a little different with the 7 playoff teams.
Exactly. That's one thing that, like, because I honestly forgot about the 17-game regular season for next year. But that's the one thing, too, that's going to be huge, and especially in both conferences, who's going to get the number one seed, because the difference between 1 and 2 is because it's just huge now for 1 and 2, because, look, I believe it's been since the Ravens got to the Super Bowl in 2013 was the last time that a team who won a wild card round made the Super Bowl. Besides that, it's usually teams who get the byes who go to the Super Bowl. So this race down the stretch is going to be very interesting. And also, too, I can't thank you enough for all the football knowledge that you've opened up my eyes up to in the last 45 minutes that we've been talking for.
My pleasure. It's fun. It's a labor of love for me.
It's a labor of love for myself, too. I can talk football with anyone, anytime, any place, anywhere. Some sports, like baseball, hockey, basketball, I kind of like to have a bit of a break from it and not talk about it for a long time. But man, I can talk football with anyone 12 months a year, 365 days a year. And also, Russell, thank you very much for coming on today's episode of YWC Football Talk. It was a pleasure to talk with you. If you guys want to follow Russell, actually, you know what? Instead of me saying it, Russell, I'm going to let you plug yourself right now and just tell people where they can find you and where they can find your writings.
Yeah, Twitter, it's BaxFootballGuru. Another Twitter account is PFG Vibe, where me and my co-host Julie Voigt do some writing together on occasion, do an occasional podcast. You can also follow Julie at Julie Noted PFG. You know, it's been a different kind of year for us in terms of shows and so on, as it is for a lot of people. But I tell people all the time, if you follow me on Bax Football Guru, whether you like it or not, you're going to get everything I write.
Exactly. And also, to the one thing I love that you do, that ever since you and I found each other on social media and Twitter, was that you basically post every day how many days until the Super Bowl, and then you're going to post an interesting, just a random player's number and a little fact about themselves. So that's just one other thing I wanted to throw into there. But Russell,
a lot of history to me is very important. You know, you got to understand where the league was well before it is now and so on. I hear a lot of people who, nothing counted before the Super Bowl and so on. Listen, if we didn't have a pre-Super Bowl era, we wouldn't have a Super Bowl. So
exactly. And like I said before, that's in a sense where with the history of the league, where that's something I believe every fan should know about. That's why I was plugging the NFL 100 series from last year that the NFL did, with just 100 greatest moments, and from a wide range of categories, and also players too, because there's a lot of players who made that list that not a lot of people know about, the average fan wouldn't know about. So if you haven't watched that, I recommend to go and find that and check that out for yourself, just to get a little bit of history on the league, and also to check out Russell on Twitter and all his writings that he finds, because he's a great follow, and he's given me a great conversation, and I cannot thank him enough for that today.
My pleasure. Hopefully we'll do it again soon.
Russell, you are always welcome back. You are officially a friend of the program. And that all I can say is, once again, is thank you very much. And we'll have to talk again sometime soon. I'll hit you up in the DMs, and we'll try to figure out another date for you to come back on.
You got it.
All right, take care. A big thanks once again to Russell Baxter for coming on YWC Football Talk today. It was a blast. It was a pleasure getting to talk to him, and he'll be back on sometime soon. He's officially a friend of the program, as is everyone who comes on this podcast. Now for my second only in-person, not interview, but discussion. I had a buddy over from high school. His name's Matt Fonseca. He's on Twitter. His stuff will be in the bio below. Him and I talked about the Pats-Texans games more definitely, as we're both New England fans, just like I said before, buddies from high school. We're going to talk a little about that, some other stuff too, just some other general NFL topics, a little less than what I said before with Russell, just a little different than there, as I didn't want Brian to try to bring up too much New England Patriots, kind of keep the fanboy and me down. But anyway, guys, here is the conversation with Matt. And yeah, here we go. Off to just a simple chat with a high school buddy.
Oh, it's another Sunday. It's another heartbreaker. New England losing 27-20 over the Houston Texans. Just, I got my buddy, I mean, Matt Fonseca here, just a high school buddy. We're just here, both Pats fans, to talk about the game. But if there's a definition of one step forward, two steps back, it not only describes this season, but it describes the game.
Yeah, I agree. And you kind of touched on it, too. It's like they're getting wins against teams that we didn't think we'd have a shot at, like Baltimore.
Yeah.
And then here we go against Houston, that's 2-7, and then we end up losing that game, right? I think the main thing also that we mentioned, if you watch the game, we really couldn't get any pressure on Deshaun Watson today, and Houston was just all over Cam more times than not. So, yeah, it was a tough one. I mean, going into the season, I really kind of had not a whole lot of expectations as to how it would go. You hope for the best, but expect for the worst. But yeah, definitely after the last two games that we won, you started to think maybe we can kind of get back on track here, hit 500, beat Houston. They're struggling too. But obviously it didn't happen. So, you know, it is what it is. And then next week's going to be interesting as well when we have to play, you know, the Cardinals with Kyler Murray. So,
and also, too, a big part of it's going to be like, oh, as Indy gets a turnover here, watching the Colts play the Packers right now, which should be the game. But a big part of this game today, like you're right, like Houston's O-line was banged up, and I was expecting us, you know, we're going to get pressure, Winovich is going to have a good game, Watson's going to get sacked, and none of that happened. Mm-hmm. Literally, like, that's a fumbled snap by Rodgers. But, and also, to the fact, our secondary played like crap today. Like, Jason, yeah. Like, no picks, no, let's see, if I had to look at one positive from the game, is that, look, Cam did not turn over the ball. Obviously, there was the one play, like, where he turned it over on downs, but the fact that he couldn't get anything done when it's, like, the chance, it's like, that second quarter ultimately cost us when we got outscored 14-3. Like, it's just, there's things that, especially against teams like the Houston Texans, you can't do.
It was really a tale of two halves this game. You know, we saw the comparison at halftime. I mean, Cam only had 85 yards passing, and Deshaun had 241.
Yeah.
Right? Three touchdowns as well for Deshaun Watson with throwing and rushing touchdowns combined. Cam didn't have anything, right? He turned it around in the second half, though. He did have a pretty good game overall with his stats there. He definitely had a good second half, but yeah, definitely just not enough there at the end for us to kind of. But you're right. I mean, we grinded ourselves back into the game. That touchdown to Bird was a great throw and catch. You know, you kind of get within reach, and then the defense just can't come up with the stops when you need them to, right? And so we were at a disadvantage there. We did have a chance at the end, but obviously couldn't get it done on the fourth down there. But yeah, I agree. Defense has been, you know, especially considering last year how our defense was like the foundation, right? They would make plays more times than not. And now this time, you know, we're watching the game and we're just like, you know, if we don't score here, we're done, because you and I don't have confidence watching this defense to make a play, right? So that's kind of the tough scenario that they're in right now.
It's just a tough reality too, of like where you see it with all these other teams for years, and now it's kind of like you're living the bad dream, like mm-hmm. the worst nightmare where mm-hmm. you want something to happen, but at the same time too, you're like, okay, we have to do this, but I don't trust our team to do this, because look, when our offense played a decent game today, like, the offense didn't do really anything bad. Whether sometimes where they didn't convert, sure.
Questionable play calls every now and then. We were scratching our head on some of the third down calls. But yeah, overall, I agree with what you're saying.
But if I had to compare a game to anyone, this was a very similar game to the Buffalo Bills game, in the sense of, you know what, they kind of hang their own. Ultimately, Buffalo won off the turnover, and we lost because of the, I wouldn't even say the failed Hail Mary. Like, that was just like, okay, the last-ditch effort. Like, look, if it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. Mm-hmm. But man, the fact that they ran a blitz on the fourth down and we didn't even recognize it. Like, there were certain plays where our block, like, not even our offensive play was bad, but the offensive line didn't hold their own. Like, there was the one sack on Cam that Wynn just, like, basically gave up on his assignment, and you can't do that.
Yeah.
But coming into next week, like, I'm already thinking about it, I'm like, I trust our offense because Arizona's defense has had moments where they're, like, they're good, but they're, like...
It's the defense that worries me.
It's the defense, especially, gonna, too.
Like, you know...
Kyler's really elusive.
He's very elusive, and then they have a lot of weapons. Like, okay, yeah. You'll put... I'm assuming Gilmore's going to cover Hopkins.
Yeah.
But I don't feel like... You know, I think Hopkins will win that matchup more times than he will lose because it's DeAndre Hopkins, right? I definitely feel like this year with Gilmore, some people could agree, it's just my opinion, but sometimes when I watch him, it just doesn't seem like the same Stephon Gilmore that we had a couple seasons back, you know what I mean? And I know there was a lot of talk about trading him at the deadline, rumors about him not being here next year. Maybe it's in his head, maybe he realizes it. You know, some that could mentally... you know, get to players where they're like, what's the point then? You know what I mean?
Yeah. But
he doesn't seem like the same guy, the dominant cornerback that he once was. And, yeah, that's pretty much my biggest concern going forward. It's like you have Larry Fitzgerald, you have DeAndre Hopkins. You know what I mean? Christian. And they got guys in the back like Chase Edmonds that can come out and catch passes and run too, right? Kenyon Drake. So it's definitely, yeah, that secondary, if we don't get pressure on Murray or anything like that and allow him to cook like Watson did, like, it's going to be a long day for us for sure, too.
Yeah.
And another thing that kind of I realized it was disappointing today, too, we didn't run the ball very well.
No.
And the rush defense for Houston is almost, I think it was dead last. They were showing the statistic. It's bad, regardless.
And we're third in running right now.
Even if it's not, you know, dead last, they're poor. They're giving up, like, over 150 yards rushing a game. And... you know, Harris ran for 43 yards. That's about it. His 9-yard touchdown was the longest run that he had all day. So, you know, other guys obviously got involved with rushing, but we definitely could have done better. And, you know, that was pretty much it. It was unfortunate. Kudos to Cam, though. Like I said, he finished the game with 365 yards after only 85 yards in the first half. So he definitely came out in the second half and did well. But, yeah, man, it was just one of those games. It was a little bit frustrating to watch because it's one of those where you think you're going to have it, and then, you know, just kind of didn't happen, didn't fall out that way.
It was literally one of those too little, too late scenarios because, like, even too, like, going forward, I'm not going to have it. I'm not going to say, like, I know, like, you and I each week, like, that's something the public doesn't know. Like, I always usually text you what I think the win-loss record is. Mm-hmm. Like, even today, like, that game basically, I know it was a lot different than the win-loss total I gave you.
Mm-hmm.
But the game today was very kind of what I thought it was going to be, like a grinded-out kind of game. I see next week being a very similar thing. At this rate, too, the Chargers, I see it being that a very similar. And then and then we have those three with the Rams, Dolphins, and Bills where I'm like, I'm not going in with like not a lot of confidence, but not much. Because when you look at games like that, you don't know what the Rams are going to be, and then the Dolphins and the Bills. Obviously, would I love to see be the Dolphins? Absolutely, because it's on my birthday. Mm-hmm. But when you have a game like that, where today it's just kind of a swift reminder of, hey, this isn't what the New England Patriots usually are. And even to people making excuses and stuff, saying, oh, they were just bad and everything. It's like, yeah, the defense wasn't bad. I just consider it the whole too little, too late, where they try to make a play, where they try to do something, but then Houston just found, like, they just found a way. It's as simple as that. Like, yeah. Deshaun Watson was good all game long. He made
some great throws in the game, too.
He did. Deshaun Watson did make some really good throws. Their blocking was good on the offensive line, even to their defensive line, which can be suspect, made plays. Like, we still have to remind today, hey, they still have one of the best defensive ends in the league in J.J. Watt on their team. Meanwhile, with Cam, like, I'm not blaming him, but, like, at the end of the day, it's one of those things where I'm just like, we got to get stuff done. Because, like how I said with the Buffalo Bills game where it was like weird plays where like they did a pitch run on the thing on like second down and 9 with Burkhead before he got hurt, which hopefully he's okay. But there's just some plays where I'm just like, you can't do that on second down. Yeah. You can't do that on third down.
Mm-hmm. I know. And, you know, I agree with what you're saying. A lot of questionable calls from time to time. Definitely didn't expect this result.
No.
I think after these, like I said, after coming off those two wins back to back, especially against Baltimore, which you didn't expect, you kind of, I feel like for the first time this season, it's like, oh, okay, might have a reason to start having some confidence here. We get to 500, and, you know, we've talked about it as well, too. a lot of close losses this season, like with Seattle and the Bills. And if those go are in our favor and we have two extra wins coming into this game, it's a whole different scenario, right?
Yeah.
Now with this loss, it's just tough because you pretty much have to win out and get some help to make the playoffs. And our schedule is not exactly easy, right? Like next week's a tough game. Then those final three games that you talked about, you never know what you're going to get with the Rams. The Miami game, I think, will be different because we didn't play Tua that game in week one. They're riding with confidence right now, too. The Dolphins definitely think they can win this division.
Yes.
Like, they're definitely in the run to win this division, and as they should be. They're playing well. Tua's off to a 3-0 start. He's playing really, really well also. And then the Bills is always a grind with the Bills, right? So it's going to be tough, and I think if you're a Patriots fan, it's kind of like, I think it's like, I think there's legitimately that 50-50 split where it's like, what's the point? We're going to finish 10-6 and get into a wild card playoff spot. And if we're lucky, maybe win a game. I don't think too many people are going to think that if we get into the playoffs, we can run through the AFC and win it all.
No.
Obviously, that can happen, but I don't think too many people think that. And then I think there's a bunch of other people that are probably like, at this point, let's just, you know, where it's slim to none that we're making the playoffs. Let's just, you know, hang it up and see if we can, you know, get a good draft pick, right? I think there's a lot of teams in that situation too, right?
Like, yeah, I'm all for
I was
sure.
telling you during the game, I was like, if I'm a Falcons fan, like, we should be better than our record going into this game against New Orleans, but we're not. And what's the point? Like, I feel like it would be a better scenario for them to get a higher draft pick in that first round and just start from scratch. You know what I mean? We talked about Matt Ryan maybe getting, you know, released. He's got a huge contract. He's getting up there in age. Just like start rebuilding, right? And the Patriots don't have to be in that situation. We have a lot of cap space for next year that I'm hoping they spend on and
think
go
like
for.
$73 million.
Yeah, so there's cap space to our disposal there, and I'm hoping they can use it. And then, you know, pretty much just go from there. So I don't know what your opinion is on it, but I definitely think that that's the split here.
Yeah.
We want to obviously see if we could squeeze into the playoffs and do it, but then there's also that part where it's like, let's just not, and then, you know, focus on 2021 season. Yeah.
Part of me always thought about, like, look, after like the Jets game at halftime, I was ready just to pack it in, say, you know what, like, embrace whatever happens the rest of the year and then lose, but then we squeak out the win against them. We have the game against Baltimore where it's like, hey, everything's fine, but then we have today where it's kind of that rough reality check of this isn't your usual New England Patriots team. This is a different team. It's a different style. I don't want to say I know what's going on, but I don't. It's just kind of like that unhit reality that you're not ready for, kind of like when you go through a breakup and like you kind of like you think, hey, maybe she'll call me back, maybe she'll do this, but she doesn't.
Yeah.
So it's like the same thing too, where we know, hey, at the end of the day, Tom's not walking back through that door. The quarterback situation is going to be very interesting going forward. I think it's going to be a very interesting offseason. If we win next week and if we beat, basically I'm going to say this. If we won today, we could sacrifice going 2-1 in this next stretch against the two LA teams and the Arizona Cardinals.
Mm-hmm.
For me to have any hope, we have to be 7-6 come December 10th, which is 3 weeks, well, just under 3 weeks away, but I believe 17 or 18 days away. And if by that time we're anywhere, like if we're even 5-7 at that point, where we go 5-7, that would be after two games. Even if we're 6-7, I'm still not going to have hope because when you have seven losses, your chances of making the playoffs are very slim. Now we're at six losses. It's a very tough pill to swallow, but you know what? I'm starting to embrace the reality of, hey, you know what? Maybe missing the playoffs isn't the worst thing in the world for this team's long-term future.
Because I don't think it is either.
You don't want, like, because the other thing, too, is I don't want to have that false hope of, like, we have to make the playoffs, and then on the final day, it has to be, oh, we have to win, and even though I know we play the Jets week 18, it's like, we have to win, but we need, like, Tennessee, Baltimore, Cleveland to lose, or even the Bills. We need, like, all these teams to lose or tie, and then we win. It's going to be one of those, like, weird scenarios like that, which I don't want. Like, I'd rather just be, you know what, by week 17, I'd rather know, hey, do we have an outside, not even an outside chance, or is there a legitimate shot at making it? Or if not, it's just, you know what, let's pack it in, let's regroup, refocus, because Belichick, for people potentially saying, oh, Belichick may get fired. No, that's not going to happen. Kraft's not going to do that. And also, for all the people going, hey, embrace the suck, we're going to go 4-12, and rebuild. No, I don't want that. Like, if we go 7-9, it's not going to be terrible, but it's not going to be the best, obviously, because like what we're used to. But you know what? If we go get that 7-9 record as, oh, what a pass by Rodgers.
Touchdown
for Packers. if we go 7-9, you know what, like go 7-9, have a draft pick. Like, I'm starting to think, you know what, hey, maybe we can pick up like a Kyle Trask or even in the later rounds of Mac Jones, because people are starting to say, like, hey, what do we need? Like, and our defense is bad. But then you got to remember, with all the opt-outs, we had a lot of opt-outs. So, like, we already had a tough time facing us, like, where Hightower, who's my personal favorite Patriot, had one of my favorite plays in Patriots history. And, like, Patrick Chung, too, two key pieces of the defense, which you're probably going to get back for the 21 season, are coming back. So it's like, you know what? Don't look at it as, oh, this team's going for rebuild, because I know the Krafts will not sign up for that. Belichick will not sign up for that. Maybe in a few years from now, if, hey, Belichick retires and they bring in a new coach and they're not the best, yeah, do that. But am I also here saying, are they going to contend for a Super Bowl in 2021? No, they're not, like next year. But if you know what, if you give the fans that small glimmer of hope of, hey, maybe we can make some noise and be in contention for the division, so where I wouldn't mind seeing it be a three-team race next year with us, Miami, and Buffalo, because we'll see what happens with the Jets.
This division will be competitive going forward, that's for sure.
But that's the thing, though. This division is going to be competitive going forward, and the more I think about it, you know what? I kind of like that. You want to see parity in the National Football League. You don't, like, for as, God damn it. For as much as you want to see your team do well and just run away with it like we have for 20 years, same time, too, a little competition never hurt anyone.
Yeah.
So if we can just buckle down and decide what we're going to do, because, like, if we're out of it, say out of these next three games, we go 1-2, right now I'm on that fence of, you know what, we're not a good football team, but we still have a chance. But like I said, we win no more. If we win only one game, or if we go on another four-game losing streak, it's over. Like, there's no pretty way to say it. Right now we're on that borderline, but right now there's not a lot of positives to look at when you look at the season. But like I said, like I like to say, any given Sunday, anything can happen.
Yeah, I mean, for me personally, I'm more excited about, because like I said, I don't really have that many expectations for the rest of the season, especially after that loss. It was a tough one, but I am interested in seeing what they do in the offseason going forward. I'm looking to see if we spend money,
yeah,
who we draft, right? And you know, there's obviously going to be a lot of question marks. Like, I was just looking at the roster, you know, like Cam Newton. Do we keep him? Do we let him go? Do we look for something else? Do we draft? Do we keep him and draft and then have somebody play under him for a while, get some, you know, experience? The running back situation, I feel like Harris is really starting to make a name for himself. I really like the kid too.
Yeah.
But I also really like Sonny Michel, right? Yeah. So I definitely think that maybe one of those guys won't be there next year. More than likely probably Burkhead, if anything. But they might keep him because for the cheap, right?
Yeah.
Demaryius Byrd, he had a great game. Demir, if I mispronounce it. He had a great game today. Six catches for 132 yards and that dime of a touchdown that Cam threw to him. Great adjustment by him, like literally turning his head while making the catch. He had a good game. There's question marks about N'Keal Harry. I'm pretty sure he's on the fence with a lot of Patriots fans. Some people think he's hasn't lived up to the hype. Some people still think he needs some time. I personally would probably want to see him finish out his 4 years just to kind of go from there. I know that Brady necessarily didn't have a lot of trust in him last year and throwing him the ball and stuff like that. Cam's definitely getting him the ball more, but he also has to stay healthy. He's been battling some injuries as well. He not the worst game today, not the best. Five catches, 41 yards. It's not great, but it's not terrible. So, you know, we'll see what happens. Got to go from there, but I definitely think that there needs to be a revamp of this offense. Playmaker-wise, when Hightower and Chung come back, I think Belichick and the guys there can make decisions on where to go with the defense, so to speak, and what to replace, who to bring in, right? We know that Chase Winovich is starting to excel and make a name for himself, right?
Yes.
He'll fit in the system, I'm sure, just fine, but... I'm personally, for me, more excited about how the offseason's going to go. I'm looking ahead to that. Obviously, I'm still going to hope for the best and tune in every Sunday on how we do, right? But it's definitely not one of those years where we're like, you know, how many times have you and I been like talking and stressing about the playoff picture, how it's going to turn out, who we're going to have to play, you know, what's the road to the Super Bowl going to be like and expecting to get there and then, you know, preparing ourselves for the stress of the Super Bowl. But that's not the case this year.
No. Right?
Not at all. And so, you know, like you said, if the right moves are made in the off season, we can definitely probably make some noise going forward. But the AFC is going to be much more competitive for years to come when you have, forget our division.
Yeah.
Forget, the division's going to be tough, we know that, but then you're going to have Mahomes. Mahomes is in the picture with Kansas City. You know what I mean? Who knows how the Colts will do going forward? I don't think Phillip Rivers is going to be there long term, but no. They will be a team that looks like they'll be, you know, competing. Tennessee, also hard to tell. If Tannehill plays well and Derrick Henry's in the mix, they can potentially compete.
Vegas.
You know, Vegas, yeah. The Raiders, I think, are another team that's going to be in there. So, you know, the AFC. And then, obviously, I know the Ravens are 6-4 and they just lost, but, you know, going forward, you'll still take them seriously.
Yeah.
Pittsburgh, they're undefeated right now. The Roethlisberger situation's up there, but if they do have somebody that can fill the shoes and play quarterback, I'm sure they're still going to be around competing as well, right?
Yeah, I think if he does retire or if he does walk, it's just their tough situation because last year we know that, hey, with Doc Hodges and Mason Rudolph, like, you know, those aren't long-term starting quarterbacks in the NFL. So if Ben does walk away at the end of this year, which very likely could happen considering his injury history, he's already won two, but he has a very strong case to win his third Super Bowl this year. What else was I going to say? And even two in the NFC, in the AFC, like, we don't know what's going to happen with Cleveland going forward, but hey, they're 7-3 right now.
Yeah.
Like you said, with the Colts, too.
I don't think Baker's the long-term solution for Cleveland, but they definitely could be a team with that roster. If they can keep most of those guys together, definitely could compete.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You never really know.
Run game is disgusting between the two running backs with 100%. Hunt and Chubb.
Yeah.
Fantastic. So, yeah.
Yeah, they have a good offensive line. Their defense is pretty solid. It's just the question of quarterback. So, we'll see what happens with Baker.
I don't know how he played today, but when we were watching the game, the scoreboard came up on the bottom there. He was 10 for 20.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he's already at 50%, which is nothing special. The yardage didn't look very well. And, you know, I'm just looking at the score right now. They beat Philly 22-17.
Yeah, like,
not a huge margin of victory, especially considering Philly's banged up and not that great.
And sucks.
Yeah. And so Mayfield finished 12-22 for 204 yards, no touchdowns, no picks. Carson Wentz had 235 yards, two TDs, two picks. So, you know, we're going to see what happens. Cleveland definitely needs to get that quarterback position solidified in order to, you know, progress going forward for long years to come.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Is anyone saying, too, like, the whole, oh, there was no real offseason, like, COVID? It's like, yeah, but at the same time, too, this is the year everyone expected Baker Mayfield to make those strides forward, because in all their losses, he's looked like crap. Mm-hmm. It's not like, oh, you can disguise it or anything. Oh, I did this. No, he's in the game against Baltimore, they got blown out. In the game against Pittsburgh, they got killed. And then the game against Vegas, they just didn't look good. So when you have that insecurities about your quarterback and you're 7-3.
I don't think he's established as, like, I was looking at a statistic earlier this week on Fox Sports, I think it was. When he is under pressure versus when he's not under pressure, the stats are just a drastic change.
Yeah.
Obviously, in this league, to win defensively, you have to get pressure on the quarterback. That's fine.
Oh, 100%.
But, you know, there are guys such as, you know, Brady, you know, Roethlisberger.
Yeah.
You see them stand in there with heat in their face, and they're still able to make those throws. And it just, he doesn't do that. He doesn't look comfortable doing that either, right?
Baker panics.
Yeah, Baker panics. And then he'll do some impulse throws, kind of like a Brett Favre, just sling it, hope for the best, and then sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, right?
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens, but I personally don't think that he's going to be the main guy going forward.
No.
Unless he pulls a real hard 180, you know?
I could see them picking up his option for next year, just being like, hey, because if he gets them to the playoffs, that's a huge accomplishment for the city. Mm-hmm. But then if they make the playoffs this year, it's like Buffalo, where last year them making the playoffs was great, but then Josh Allen, like, and they lost to Houston in the wild card round, it was, hey, this isn't enough. They went on and got Stephon Diggs. Mm-hmm. Obviously, with Cleveland, you got the weapons, but this year there's going to be some significant moves made. Like, where Cleveland a lot right now reminds me a lot of what the Raptors were before Kawhi came to town. Where, look, you got the pieces there, but you're not...
You need somebody to put you over the hump.
You need someone to get you over the edge, exactly. Yeah. So if you
that
can...
X factor.
Like, for example, Julio Jones. If you want to trade Beckham to Atlanta for Julio Jones, or, like, get something like that. Or even to Kenny Golladay or Marvin Jones. Because at the end of the day, I think that... I do think Odell's going to be gone at the end of the season. Mm-hmm. Landry, I think they may keep on to, but I don't know.
I think Landry stays.
Yeah.
Landry's done well since he's been there.
Yeah.
I personally think that Landry's a guy that Baker throws the ball to more.
Yeah.
He looks for Landry more than he does OBJ. That's kind of like his security blanket. But I want OBJ out personally. Let's be honest. He hasn't been the OBJ since he came to Cleveland. Like, the OBJ that was in the New York Giants facility there. Like, that was the guy that was on highlight reels making the one-handed catches. He still does it now, but it's just, it's not the same. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, you know, Eli Manning would look at OBJ. He would look for him. But I don't feel like he can definitely have more catches. I just don't see it. Like, Baker doesn't go to him. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
I think he needs to go somewhere else, especially because, you know, he's 28 now. He's going to be 20. He just turned 28.
Yeah, he's going to be 29 next season.
And, you know, he's getting up there to that 30 age, right? And, like, doesn't feel like he's been in the league very long, but he's been in here for a while now. And you just don't want to see a guy with that much talent, his years of prime getting wasted. And I feel like that's what's happening in Cleveland. I personally don't think he wants to be there anyways. He's made, obviously, some comments that we've heard over the past where he gives indication where he wants out or he'd be open to going somewhere else.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think Landry stays. I think OBJ gets dealt. And now it's also another question mark, too, where he is starting to become injured a lot. And then you start to wonder, his value might go down, right? So it's going to be interesting. We'll see what happens. But if you have to ask me, I think Landry stays.
Yeah.
I think OBJ maybe gets dealt. And Baker's a toss-up.
Yeah, because even too with all the other teams in the AFC, like I was thinking about the AFC West, like Denver's got a lot of potential, but we're still on a wait and see, especially with guys like
Drew Lock.
Yeah, with Drew Lock, there's still a lot of question marks.
Thing there,
very inconsistent. I also have been sorry.
They lose to the Falcons 2 weeks ago.
Yeah,
right. A game where they should have probably won. Atlanta was.
Oh, that's not good.
Yeah, it looks like a broken hand there or something for Thielen. There, he got hit hard.
Yeah,
but back to my point with the Broncos. They would win, and then you go play Atlanta, whose home record over the past 12 games or so has been terrible, and then you don't even compete.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
But Jerry Judy's been fantastic this year. I think he's a great receiver. Mm.
They are missing Cortland Sutton, though.
Missing Cortland Sutton, another young stud that's under the age of 25, I believe.
They are missing Von Miller, too.
Von Miller got hurt with the Achilles, right? Yeah. So it's really going to depend on this. A lot of teams are in this situation. Do we get this guy long term as our QB, or do we, you know,
like
roll the dice here, right?
The way I'm looking at it too is a guy I would go after if I'm the Broncos. If you think Locke's not going to work out, if you want to do like kind of what the Bears are doing, because I think that's where the Broncos are right now. They're in that Chicago Bear territory where you totally don't trust your quarterback. The other thing I was saying, the thing I've started to preach on here is I think Vic Fangio's gone at the end of the season, regardless of their record. I think, you know what, you just got to get a younger head coach in there, like a new school mind, like an offensive catalyst, as well as Dalvin Cook gets yet another touchdown. You just need someone in there who's going to be an offensive signal caller.
Yeah.
Like, no disrespect to Vic Fangio, one of the best defensive coordinators in the NFL, but that's the thing. He's one of those guys where, you know what, he's a better DC than he is a head HC. There's just certain guys in this league who are like that. Todd Bowles, for example, with the Buccaneers. We saw, because there was a lot of times where, with the Jets, he would run not a lot of suspect plays, but just a lot of safe calls. Like, have the chance to win it and go for it on fourth down, but he would punt it away.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you need a brash young mind, a good offensive coordinator to go into them and kind of fix it up. The other thing I'm looking at too with the Broncos is if Sam Darnold's going to be available at the end of the year, because this goes back to my point of potentially, hey, you know, Trubisky's struggling, they brought in Foles. If I'm the Broncos, why not look at a guy like Sam Darnold? You know, he's got a lot of potential.
I think Sam Darnold's going to get shopped a lot this offseason. I think there's a lot of teams that could use him.
Exactly.
Like you mentioned, like, you know, take a look at him in Chicago for sure.
I'm not saying Chicago will look at him. I'm just saying Denver should do like what Chicago's done.
Mm-hmm,
just win more games, obviously.
I also heard, I think it was ESPN was saying it. I can't remember who exactly, but they were mentioning his name with the 49ers because Jimmy G's now starting to get hurt a lot. They're not sure if that's what they want to do going forward, paying him all that money. But I definitely think that, you know, you can have your opinion on Sam Darnold. He's hot. He's not. He's this and that. But the Jets are terrible.
The prototypical USC quarterback.
The Jets are terrible. And, like I just don't think that, like, even, like, all this talk about Trevor Lawrence getting drafted and going to the Jets, it'll be the same situation. Like, that's genuinely something I'm worried about. Like,
yeah.
I just feel like putting him in that situation is not going to do him any good. As talented as he is, and people saying he's the hottest quarterback prospect
since Andrew Luck.
Since Andrew Luck. Maybe even higher. They're rating him, some guys. I just don't know, man. This is a really, really, really bad, bad team. I think the Jets should obviously fire their head coach as well, but I no idea what's going to happen there. But I definitely think Sam Darnold might get shopped around. I think there's a couple teams that would pounce on him, you know?
And also, too, San Francisco, I don't know if you know this, but the 49ers can get out of Jimmy's contract this year. Mm-hmm. No money owed. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And also, too,
I think they'll do that.
I think they'll do that 100% too. The other thing with Jimmy is a lot of people are saying, hey, maybe he comes back here. I would like to have him back here because you know what? He still is a good quarterback. It's just those injury concerns that really scare the hell out of me where I'm like, I don't want to sign a guy where there's that risk of injury. I'm sure Jimmy will find a home. Honestly, if the Bears wanted to do this, try to go for him. He's a hometown kid. I was even saying, too, Cleveland could be a landing spot for Jimmy Garoppolo. Because with the Patriots, if they were to go after free agents, I think I've said this to you before, but Matt Stafford is a guy I always kind of circled because I personally think Detroit's going to blow it up at the end of this year.
Did you take Matt Ryan?
Part of me wants to. It's just the contract's way too big.
Yeah.
If he were to get... I could see, honestly...
But then again, with all this being said,
yeah,
quarterback and whatnot, I don't think... Like, we could bring in, you know... Like, I don't even think Patrick Mahomes on this Patriots team with this receiving core could really lead us to the promised land. I think there needs to be more pieces coming in other than just the quarterback situation, right?
Oh, 100%.
We don't have a tight end, you know what I mean? Like, even our offensive line, which has been relatively good, I find that they have their moments, they looked
a
little shaky today,
yes.
You know what I mean? But the only thing that we have depth on, without question right now, is the running backs between White and you know, Burkhead and
Harris
and Sony Michel, right? But obviously not all of them are going to stay there. But, I mean, yeah, I wouldn't mind, like you said, you know, taking a look at some guys. I think Stafford's a good quarterback, just really in a team where they're poorly run, right?
Yeah.
The Lions are just the Lions. I never had an issue with Matt Ryan, too. I always thought he was a good quarterback. Nothing, like, sensational. Yeah, he won the MVP a couple years back, but you know, there's definitely a few guys that I feel could definitely, if they left their teams and went somewhere else, they could flourish for sure.
Yeah, like even to Kirk Cousins is a guy you don't know what's going to happen. Like, I know they obviously have him for this year and next year secure. That's why I thought with Minnesota this year was kind of like a write-in year for them because Mike Zimmer got an extension, Rick Spielman got an extension, Kirk Cousins has an extension, so they kind of saw this year of, hey, we can, like, you know what, kind of take it easy. But then they saw 1-4, and they were like, or 1-5, actually, excuse me, and they were like, oh, shit, now they're 4-5.
Because
even with the Vikings, too, that's another team where you don't exactly know what's going to go on. Because I feel like going into next season, it's going to be kind of like, we want to see something. Another quarterback, too, I honestly believe this, and for everyone saying that I'm crazy, if I'm the New England Patriots, why not take a look at Dak Prescott? Dak Prescott does not owe anything to the Dallas Cowboys. I honestly think...
A few minutes ago when you were talking, he popped into my head. I think there might be some... if the Cowboys don't decide to pick him up, I think there will be teams calling for Dak Prescott. Because I'll be the first to admit, I've been very, very hard on Prescott.
Yeah.
I've had my fair share of criticism for him. Not in regards to talent or anything like that, but just the fact that you need to win games.
Yeah.
And you're not winning games, you know what I mean? And... you know, he had a great rookie season, but since then, I don't think that it's been, in terms of winning, what it should be. And, like, that division's god-awful, right?
Yeah.
And he, by no means is he the reason that the Cowboys are as bad as they are this year. It's the defense, without question. He was throwing passes left, right, and center before the injury and TDs, doing everything he could to get them into the game. But I definitely, I can definitely see teams, you know, reaching out for him and, you know, making calls. Why not, man? Give it a shot.
Yeah.
But then again, like I said,
we're
going to need to surround this quarterback, whoever it may be, with talent.
Oh, no, 100%. We're going to have to surround him with talent. But even too, I just said the Dak Prescott thing with New England just because I'm saying, hey, he doesn't know anything to the Dallas Cowboys.
He's probably on some shaky grounds with them anyways with this whole franchise tag situation, right?
Because if he says franchise, you can just go, no, he doesn't have to take it.
Mm-hmm.
Because even to last year, he deserved to get a long-term deal. He didn't. And also, too, with the Dallas Cowboys, if the New York Jets feel like Trevor Lawrence doesn't want to go there, I'm sorry, but a 6'6", blonde, long-haired Christian quarterback in Arlington, Texas...
Tank for Trevor.
Not tank for Trevor, but trade. Like, trade your fucking future away. Mm-hmm. Because, look, you have the weapons around him already. You got Zeke.
Tank, trade... whatever for Trevor.
If you look, I want you to look this deal up either now or when you get home, but the Herschel Walker deal that the Dallas Cowboys made with the Minnesota Vikings to exchange to get Herschel Walker, because Herschel Walker, same thing back like 40 years ago, was this top, high-rated running back prospect coming out of Georgia. It's a similar thing, so I'm saying that where, look, I honestly would not be surprised if Jerry Jones is unsure of his quarterback situation. You know, they say, hey, we want Dak. What's stopping them from making a couple phone calls and going, hey, why not try to get Trevor Lawrence if the New York Jets, if he knows they don't want to go, if he doesn't want to go to the New York Jets, regardless of what the coaching situation is there?
Yeah.
That's the only thing I want to add on. Do you have anything else you want to talk about today, or is that about it?
I think that might be it, man. We covered a good lot of topics today. But yeah, all in all, it was a close game like we anticipated. We didn't get the result we wanted, but yeah, it is what it is. I mean, with this loss, like I said, we're going to need a miracle to get in the playoffs, win out, plus some help. Highly unlikely, but very, very much looking forward to how the rest of the season plays out, and especially the off season, most definitely. So, yeah, we'll go from there. But yeah, other than that, I think we kind of touched up on everything that needed to be said today regarding the game and obviously the off season going forward.
Exactly. So that's just, it's literally the waiting game at this point. Just wait and see where this team goes. But if in the next couple weeks there is a seventh loss next to their record, it's time to pack it in my opinion. Mm-hmm. But anyway, guys, thank you very much for Matt. And also big thanks to Russell Baxter for coming on today. I hope you guys enjoyed episode 42 of YWC Football Talk. And I will see you for episode 43 right before Thanksgiving. Good night, everybody.
Do, Did, Will, the Story of People podcast is now available on the Crier Media Network. The first 5 episodes are here and feature some incredible guests that fit into one or all 3 of those categories. Ready? Tara Sloan from the San Jose Sharks, Undercurrent Podcast at NBC Sports. Marianne Iveson from Iveson Voice and the Let's Take This Outside podcast to talk about the world of outdoors as well as voiceover land. Ariana Hunsicker, future Canadian Paralympic swimmer, already winning tons of awards for this country. Scott McGregor from the Hot Wallet podcast to dumb down the world of crypto, Bitcoin, and NFTs so you don't have to. And Jackie Holowaty from Climate Pledge Arena in Seattle, Washington, the first net zero carbon certified arena on the planet. Wherever you get your pods, wherever you watch your pods, and on the Crier Media Network.
I'm Jeff Woods, and I'm shining a light on music and the rock stars who make it.
He just was one of those people. He stood out.
He was a magic guy. He really was a magic guy. We all have force. He had the same amount of force as we all had.
This was before Led Zeppelin. Robert was full on. I mean, he was Led Zeppelin without the band behind him. He had the hair, the jeans, the whole thing, you know. And he was amazing.
The Records and Rockstars podcast, heard around the world and yours to hear wherever you get podcasts. All the episodes from JeffWoodsRadio.com.